Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. Officer-involved shootings and other critical incidents have triggered fierce debates, both locally and nationally, about when the use of lethal force is appropriate, since protests against police-involved shootings became the subject of national debate several years ago. There's been more focus in local police departments on anti-bias initiatives, as well as more scenario-based training. With no nationwide standards on police training, what are local departments doing? And how do prosecutors decide when the use of a force is appropriate? Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. The number of police shootings statewide grew in 2019, but so have efforts to improve transparency and trust between the law enforcement community and the residents they serve. Joining us today from Stevens Point is Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky, who is also the president of the Wisconsin District Attorney Association. Louis, welcome back to Route 51.
Thank you very much.
Also joining us is Wausau Police Chief Ben Bliven. Ben, thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, Shereen.
Your questions are welcome to email us at route51@wpr.org or join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. With regard to officer-involved critical incidents, Wisconsin is unique in a couple of ways. One, because the state requires an outside agency to investigate them. Ben, can I start by asking you to explain what that means?
Sure. So anytime that there is an officer-involved death, we are required to use an outside agency. An officer-involved death, often people think about that in terms of an officer-involved shooting, but that could also be perhaps a high-speed pursuit that results in the death of somebody or some other mechanism of death. And an outside agency means that, you know, the Wausau Police Department cannot investigate an incident that the Wausau Police Department was involved in. So, you know, we had an officer-involved shooting a couple of months ago, and the Sheriff's Department in Marathon County was also involved with the Wausau Police Department. So neither of our agencies could investigate that. Our standard practice in Wausau is to ask the Division of Criminal Investigations, the state DCI agency, to come in and do that investigation. So there an outside entity that is not involved with the operations of our police department, and we ask them to come in and do that investigation.
So is it always DCI then for Wausau, the Division of Criminal Investigation, as you said?
Yeah, that's our practice here in Wausau. There are agencies around the state that use that have other agreements with other agencies to come in and do that investigations, but we always use DCI.
Okay. Louis, prosecutors then ultimately decide whether or not any criminal charges will be filed against any officers involved in these incidents. So at what point does an investigation leave the hands of DCI or another investigation agency and wind up with the district attorney's office?
Well, once the reports are completed, and I agree with Chief Bliven that most cases in the state of Wisconsin are handled by the Division of Criminal Investigation, a unit within the Department of Justice, simply because of conflict of interest issues where many officers may know each other, or in this case, Chief discussed in Wausau, you have the Sheriff's Office and the city, and they need it's an outside agency. But once the reports are completed, usually, you know, sometimes it can take weeks or months. They are then submitted to the district attorney of the county where the shooting occurred, the death occurred, and then that district attorney determines if there is a legal basis, if the actions were justified, for example, or not, if the person acted within their sworn duties or not, their training or not, and then ultimately if the elements are there under the Wisconsin jury instructions to file criminal charges.
There's kind of this, and we see this in many, many aspects. People have this feeling that they want information now. Now, we're in this world where we have information at our fingertips. They want things to be done right now. So there's sometimes this impatience when people are waiting for the outcome, a decision to be made. How long, I mean, why does it take so long? Louis, maybe you can answer that.
Well, I'll say this. I know you had an incident back in January in Marathon County. I think the District Attorney Whetstone ultimately made her decision in March. I believe that was the time period thereabout. I had a similar incident in 14. where it was in May 17th of 14, I made my decision several months later. These take time. The investigation takes a very long time. The public should be expecting it's very thorough. DCI does a very thorough investigation. Several officers come in. They go through any initial reports, and they create their own reports. And then ultimately, then it goes to the DA, who starts all over, because that DA is not part of the investigation for procedural reasons and also to keep the DA's perspective as fresh and unbiased as possible. Ultimately, we're deciding whether or not the homicide of someone, because that's essentially every death of a person is considered a homicide, then we have to determine if it's criminal or not. And so these are very weighty obligations of each DA. When I did my investigation, I took a lot of time, ultimately determined the officer who was off duty was acting in official capacity when he shot and killed Charles Jamison in May 17th of 14, when Jamison was breaking into the officer's house where he was trying to kill the officer and burn down the guy's house. So there was a lot of evidence, but there were some concerning things that I found in the report in that situation that caused me to have DCI do more investigation. Ultimately, the officer was cleared, and there was no legal basis to file charges.
One thing that you said here really caught my attention. You said that investigation starts all over again when it gets to you, to a prosecutor. So do you go back and re-interview people then? Is that what happens?
Well, I should clarify that if more investigation is needed, the district attorney will go back to the investigating agency and ask for more follow-up, for example. But ultimately, when all the reports come in, sometimes it's hundreds of pages, that the DA then really begins from the beginning and mm-hmm. looks at the initial officer-involved shooting and goes through all the interviews. So it's not like the report comes over and there's a check mark that says, hey, DA, this is a good shoot. Hey, DA, this is a bad shoot. No, it's completely left up to the district attorney to determine if this shooting was legally justified.
Well, Ben, criminal charges aside, when these kinds of situations happen, is there always then an internal investigation? What does that all entail?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, the initial investigation by the external agency into an officer-involved shooting or officer-involved death is a criminal investigation, and I think that's important for people in the community to understand that it's not a small investigation. So anytime you're doing a criminal investigation, when you complete the investigation and send it to the district attorney, their responsibility is to review it and ask for charges. And, you know, like the district attorney indicated, sometimes they ask for additional information, and that's pretty routine in a criminal investigation. Once that investigation is complete in an officer-involved shooting, we also have a responsibility to do an administrative internal investigation. And that investigation oftentimes is done once we get the investigation that's done by the external agency. So, you know, we will also review the reports completed by the by DCI, and they are often hundreds of pages long and very detailed with lots of witness accounts and that kind of thing. And so we will look at that to make sure that officers have followed all of our policies and procedures and followed their training. We'll look to see if we need to evaluate our policies to make sure that we have them set up correctly. We'll use the information we learned for additional training. And so we also will do an administrative internal investigation once that criminal investigation is complete.
So is there ever a scenario in which, say, an officer might have violated internal policy, maybe didn't act the way that your department would dictate, but that response, that violation doesn't necessarily rise to the level of breaking the law? Is that a possibility too?
Yeah, absolutely. That's certainly a possibility. You know, we provide a lot of training to our officers in terms of and have expectations in terms of how to communicate to somebody, how to try to de-escalate a situation, use alternative force options, what type of tactics they might use to keep themselves safe and potentially prolong, a situation so that they don't have to use force. So there's a lot of variables that we put into play in terms of policy and procedure, but that yet, you know, might not rise to the level of criminal conduct.
So, Louis, what factors do you look at from a legal standpoint when deciding how to handle a case like this? Is it all about the law, or do factors like the officer's training and time on the job, the experience, does that all matter?
Well, the simple answer is all the above, but the most critical analysis is under the Wisconsin jury instructions. There is a committee made up of judges that meets regularly that puts together instructions that the jury uses to determine if at a trial if there is sufficient evidence, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, to convict a person. And under the jury instructions for the applicable action, the DA should have those next to him or her as they're looking through the evidence, investigative reports to determine if there is proof beyond a reasonable doubt that a crime occurred. Now, I have to back up a little bit, which is we look at these reports by first determining whether or not the shooting was done in an official capacity, for example. For example, a person who is pointing a firearm at a law enforcement officer is given instructions to drop the firearm, makes an aggressive move toward law enforcement, likely that would be considered and is shot then by law enforcement and ultimately subsequently dies, that would be a justified shooting from that perspective. The DA then would go in to determine, for example, if there's other things that were known to law enforcement before they shot, for example, if there's anything else there, and that's why these investigations get into everything from the officers' text messages that they may be texting each other, if there was any prior concerns with that officer and the decedent, for example, there was bad blood between them. I mean, these reports are very go into the actions of the officer. Because ultimately the public has a right and expectation to know that when lethal force is used, it's used appropriately. And as we look at the Department of Justice website, since 2015, there's 69 reports there, 69 deaths, about 13.8 per year. And those reports, which are all made public after the DA determines that charges will not be filed, that the public can then see that complete analysis has been done, because what the legislature wanted, the DA wants, and the police wanted is that there's no feeling that this was we'll let Officer X go because they're an officer and you know maybe they had a bad day and they shouldn't have shot, but they're an officer, so we'll give them a pass that we wouldn't give the average citizen. That's something that the DA's absolutely has to root out. And in my work as the WDA president and in my own officer-involved shootings, I mean, that's something they just have not seen. So that's the public needs to understand that the analysis here is very in-depth. And I spent about 4 months investigating mine, 2 months longer than DA Whetstone did in hers, because I had some other issues that I went through.
Ben, you referred to training and de-escalation, and I know de-escalation strategies, experts say, that can lead to fewer shots fired. We also had a question from Matt in Wausau that relates to this. Matt wants to know, why can't we tase folks or shoot them in the leg? I mean, how are officers being trained, and what do they look for?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so, you know, from day one in the police academy, we start to teach officers about the importance of communication, and that is trained day one in the police academy throughout their entire career. Is communication is the key. How you talk to somebody, the words you use, the tone you use, and all of those things matter. And in a critical incident, it can be the difference literally between life and death. And so that's a really key piece of this. But in addition to the communication are force options. And so we have obviously empty hand controls, doing hand-to-hand combat with people who are resistive. We have the ability to use things like pepper spray and tasers and a variety of other things. And so there's a ton of training that goes into our police officers, and that's reinforced throughout their career in terms of when to use certain types of force and when certain types of force are not appropriate. So when an officer is faced with a person who has a firearm, that is a lethal threat, and we will not respond to that threat with lesser use of force. So it's not appropriate for an officer to use a taser in response to a lethal threat. And so it simply isn't safe for the police officer to do that.
You're listening to Wausau Police Chief Ben Bliven and Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky, our guests today on Route 51, as we examine officer-involved shootings and what constitutes reasonable force. When we return, we'll delve into the longer-lasting impact these incidents have on the officers involved and the ways prosecutors are working to promote transparency in their charging decisions. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. You can also email questions to route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky is here today, along with Wausau Police Chief Ben Bliven, as we discuss officer-involved shootings and other critical incidents and their impact on police, prosecutors, and communities. Email us at route51@wpr.org or join us by phone. The number to call is 800-780-9742. When an officer-involved shooting happens, the officers involved are typically placed on administrative leave until an investigation is complete. During that time, there can be a great deal of controversy in public, such as what we experienced in Wausau after a video of a fatal shooting was circulated on social media. Chief Bliven, I want to ask you more about that video in just a bit, but first I'd like to ask about what officers go through when they're involved in these kinds of incidents from an emotional standpoint. What is that like for them?
Well, I really appreciate you asking that question, Shereen, because it's a critical piece of information that I think is often not discussed in the aftermath of a critical incident like an officer-involved shooting. You know, officers face a tremendous amount of trauma throughout their career. There's usually about 150 to 175 officers that are killed duty each year, and in most years, the number of officers that commit suicide is higher than the number that are killed in the line of duty, and that's a result of the significant trauma officers face. And some of that trauma is, in an officer-involved shooting. And so, we take that very seriously. The mental health of our police officers. I think we owe it to our police officers to do the best we can in terms of keeping their mental health as good as can be, but we owe it to our communities because our communities expect our police officers to have good mental health. So it's important for everybody. So in the immediate aftermath of a shooting, we quickly remove officers from the scene, bring them back to the police station. We pair them with a partner police officer. They have to be they have to have a conversation with DCI, the investigating agency, before they leave. We do our best to give them support in that time, talk to them about what they're going to experience, what the process is going to be for the investigation, talk to them about administrative leave. We talk to them about the self-care, things like make sure you're staying hydrated, make sure you're trying to get sleep, even though sleep is often difficult in the days following an officer-involved shooting, obviously avoiding alcohol and excessive caffeine. And staying away from social media is a key component of mental health. We saw that in January in the aftermath of the officer-involved shooting here in Wausau. There's a lot of negative commentary from the community, and that's not good for an officer to be out there and reading those types of things. The following day, we put them in touch with a psychologist, a counselor, so that they have the opportunity to understand what's going to happen in terms of their psychological state in the next coming days and the aftermath of that trauma, and give them the touch point, and they have the freedom to reach out to that counselor as often as possible. Officers are instructed not to discuss the details of the incident with anybody until after their interview with the investigating agency. So we have to wait to do a group counseling session, a group critical incident stress debriefing until all those interviews are done. Usually that's anywhere from 4 to 7 days, give or take, depending on the incident and the investigation. And then we'll bring in a trained professional, and we do a group critical incident stress debriefing so officers can talk about what happened, what they're experiencing. And then we give them as much ongoing care that we can provide them in terms of EAP, additional counseling, and that kind of thing in the aftermath of an officer-involved shooting.
Louis, how about you? As a prosecutor, you're making life and death decisions, and then making charging decisions. You're looking at this graphic video. You're looking through mounds of difficult evidence. What is that like from a personal standpoint, and what kind of a toll does it take on prosecutors?
Well, I agree with the chief that, first of all, these are very consequential actions that all parties are dealing with, and that for the public, they need to understand that no one wants to shoot anybody, let alone kill someone, an officer shooting a citizen, for example. That's just something that's not wanted. And that when the district attorney gets the file, it's a very solemn act. It is requiring that DA to work very deliberately. And in the manner that I worked on, I did all my work, and then I actually even had the Department of Justice review my work. And I said, you know, review it and be critical of my analysis, because ultimately the elected district attorney, it's their call. But I wanted to make sure that my analysis, they agreed with it. And ultimately I released a very detailed report to the public so that they could see what was going on. And the investigative file then was released to the public under the under Chapter 17547. 5A, 5B, which happens when the DA indicates that no charges will be filed. But it is a weighty process, and you know, each DA has a process when we're looking at certain photos and reading certain reports to look at it critically, scientifically, if you will, so that the emotion, you try to keep the emotion out, because you can't do this from an emotional standpoint. You have to do it from a practitioner standpoint.
Ben, I'd like to turn to this, the recent officer-involved shooting in Wausau. We touched on it a little bit already. This was a source of a great deal of controversy, at least initially. Six officers involved, including some from your department. Suspect shot and killed, and this very short snippet of video captured by a bystander was posted on social media. It was widely circulated right afterward. What kind of effect did that video have on public perception and on your officers?
Well, it has a tremendous impact on public perception, and, you know, I think the important thing about not just a citizen video, but about, you know, in regards to police body cameras, police squad videos, any video that's shared without context can be, you know, difficult for people to understand the entirety of a situation. You know, in an officer-involved shooting, there's hundreds of pages of documents. We have hours upon hours of body cam and squad video to go through, and there's a lot of context to that situation. So when there's a video that's put out there, and especially in this case, you know, the video that was put out included about, I think it was maybe 30 to 45 seconds long, and it didn't begin recording until the officers had already been on scene and engaged with the suspect for, you know, for 10 to 12 minutes already. And so there's very little information that's provided in that video, and it's difficult for people to understand the entirety of the context of the situation, and therefore people jump to conclusions about police officer actions, and it does a disservice to the investigation, because there are witnesses that need to be interviewed, and that may taint their memories. We know that people's memories aren't perfect, and we want them to tell us in an investigation what they recall seeing without being swayed by other people's statements, without being swayed by video of a piece of the incident.
Louis, 2 months after the Wausau shooting, Marathon County District Attorney Teresa Whetstone held a virtual news conference sharing the results of this investigation. It was probably the longest and most comprehensive news conference I've ever seen surrounding a police shooting. Very, very methodical. Took us through the evidence, showed us portions of video, and explained each one. What kind of steps do prosecutors take to make sure that the public feels confident about the decisions that are being made?
Well, for example, as you're indicating, as D.A. Whetstone did, that is probably the gold standard when you actually have a news conference and you go through the evidence. I know D.A. Lissay in Brown County did the same, and an officer involved he had. That is really important so that the public has an opportunity to understand the decision-making of the D.A. And why or why not. For example, criminal charges are being declined, or why and why they're being declined. I know from my own personal experience, you know, when there is a gray area where there's a question, you know, was this shooting lawful? In other words, was it did it make sense legally in this particular situation? Those an area where the DA really should really critically explain to the public the analysis. And, you know, sometimes these officer-involved shootings, not speaking of any particular one, there is a question. And, you know, sometimes we see these on national news, for example. And without knowing the reports, it's really not proper to judge by just a video, for example. You really need to know the full perspective. But if there is a question, though, when there is ultimately at the end of the day what happened here, if there is doubt, you know, what's going on? You know, then the DA makes that decision on why or why not the charges are being filed, and ultimately the DA is held accountable for that decision. And that's why each DA is elected, and each DA is independent from the law enforcement agency. There's layers to protect the citizens, to protect the officer, and protect the criminal justice system as a whole.
Has this changed at all over the years? Are prosecutors more cognizant of the need for transparency than they have been in the past, maybe because of the social media aspect and what people are reading, or is this really the same as it always has been?
No, it absolutely has changed. Not the prosecutor's analysis and their sense of duty and sense of being separate from the investigation, but the social media aspect has definitely changed it. I mean, we all know that, you know, we could find ourselves in a compromised situation if someone records us and it was completely innocent, but then posted, we look silly, or we look like we're doing something wrong because of everybody has a camera now. That's 4K in some respect. So it's really important that the investigations are done in a manner where we're not releasing details before ultimately, the investigation file goes to the DA. That taints the process. We don't have these processes done in a public forum through, you know, how people used to in the past, you know, just, you know, have these mobs and things like that. We don't do that. This is to protect the process. And ultimately, when people have questions, as your callers may have or anybody in the community, they should ask those questions after everything is done so that there's a complete picture. But social media has changed, and also the use of body cams has changed the analysis, because remember, the body cam only records, or the cell phone only records what it is pointed at, and it doesn't get the opposite angle. And if there's not an opposite angle, that can be an area where there is an investigative need, and we can't jump to conclusions, because a lot of us do that, and then we second-guess ourselves on the back end, which we basically say, you know what, I was wrong now that I know this.
Ben, how do you balance the need for public information with the need for privacy during these incidents? I mean, how do you manage that? I know when this incident happened, you had a press conference and shared some things on social media. How do you weigh that?
Yeah, it's probably different for each police department or sheriff's department, depending on philosophy and how much, you know, you typically communicate. I think for me and the Wausau Police Department, you know, we do our best to create an environment of ultimate transparency as best as we can. Whenever there is any kind of incident in our community that the media or our community is asking about, we share information, we sit down, we'll have meetings, we'll do on-camera interviews, we'll share information on social media. So in the aftermath of what is one of the most serious situations in a community where an officer has just been involved in a shooting, it's really difficult not to provide information. To D.A. Malevsky's point, it isn't appropriate for us to comment on the investigation first and foremost, but secondarily, me as the police chief, I don't get information from the investigating agency, and rightfully so. So there's a void of communication in the aftermath of an incident like this. So I think the press conference is really, really critical to be able to provide information to the community to set the expectation that, remember, I don't have the information about what the investigation is showing, so I can't comment on it, and it would be inappropriate to do so. But then, in regards to the Facebook posts, there's that void of communication. So, while I can't talk about the investigation, I can talk about the process. Why do we do things the way that we do? Why do we have an outside agency investigating? What might they be doing? How long is this going to take? What do we do to hold officers accountable? What does accountability in an officer-involved shooting look like? And provide that information and some context so that when the district attorney is ready and has a decision made, then all of those things that the district attorney is communicating out to the community, it makes a little more sense, hopefully.
And Louis, what about from a prosecutorial standpoint? How do you balance the need for public information with the need for privacy? Some things that just cannot be released.
Well, each DA takes the Wisconsin Open Records Law under 1935 very seriously. And this statute that we're dealing with, Chapter 175.47, specifically discusses that within that, which it discusses that during the investigation, the open records are ceased. We don't release the records. Once the DA makes the decision not to prosecute, the file is released. And that's something very significant. Most district attorney's offices consider their files to be not open to public inspection under the open records law, according to State versus Faust. We basically say our records are sealed. Now you can go to the law enforcement agency and get those, but the DA's files are sealed. And in this case, what we're basically saying under statute is that these very lengthy investigations are going to open up to the public, and we're going to let you look at all this. But there is a balancing that must be done. But the first part of the balancing is the investigation is done, independent of the prosecutor. Then the prosecutor reviews it. If the prosecutor needs follow-up, they speak to law enforcement, and ultimately that prosecutor makes the decision and is required to then release their findings. I would also indicate that under the statute, each agency, law enforcement agency, must have a policy that they file that is subject to open records to say what is their policy on these officer-involved shootings. What internal mechanisms do we do to look at this? Do we do internal investigations? Are those public, et cetera? So each agency has to pre-think what would happen if we have one of our officers involved in a shooting like this.
You're listening to Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky and Wausau Police Chief Ben Bliven on Wisconsin Public Radio as we discuss the short and long-term effects of officer-involved shootings and the way in which they are investigated. We'd like to hear from you, too. Call us at 800-780-9742 or email your questions to route51@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky and Wausau Police Chief Ben Bliven are our guests today, discussing officer-involved shootings and their critical incidents in our region. Your questions are welcome. Email us at route51@wpr.org or call us at 800-780-9742. Louis, there will always be critics who say that local prosecutors will ultimately never charge a police officer involved in shooting with a crime, in part because they question whether any prosecutor, given a close relationship they have with the police community, could ever be truly impartial. So what is your response to that kind of criticism?
Well, normally the elected district attorney in each office is handling these, or they'll assign an experienced prosecutor. But at the end of the day, the buck stops on the desk of the elected district attorney. The public, through the ballot box, holds that DA accountable on his or her actions on these matters or any other case. But it is a criticism that then must be met with a good investigative report by law enforcement and a good investigative prosecutorial report by the DA. That is how you meet the criticism that the DA is essentially in bed with the law enforcement office. You know, that is something I hear, but then you just need to explain to the public the very critical analysis that we have to do. You know, ultimately it gets down to, you know, why did the jury not convict X offender? Well, they did not find proof beyond a reasonable doubt, the highest burden under the criminal law. Our founders and ultimately the legislature and our constitution, our statutes, it made it very difficult to find people guilty and to take away their liberties. So in this instance, when we look at these actions, if we believe, you know, first of all, if we get past that this was not a good shooting, you know, when I say good, no shooting is good, but what I mean is it was lawful. If we get past that step, then there's the whole step of, can you prove that a crime occurred? That is, these are real critical analyses. So I think people have to understand that, you know, we have very good law enforcement. We have law enforcement that's trained. We have prosecutors that are also trained, and that what people may see on TV is just not, you know, it's fiction. In movies and things like that, where, as your caller indicated, why don't you just shoot the person in the leg? Well, that's fiction. That's not how officers are trained, and we wouldn't expect if someone pulled a gun on any one of us that we are required then to shoot the person in the ankle or throw a stick at them or something.
Okay, so Ben, since we're talking about impartiality, we had an email from Matt in Wausau who said, ultimately, this is the police investigating the police, right? And I mean, I guess, given the ways in which all the agencies work together, you work with DCI on investigations, you work with the Sheriff's Department on investigations, given those ways, how can you ensure impartiality in these investigations?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, one that comes up in the aftermath of probably every officer-involved shooting is the, you know, the police investigating the police. And, you know, in terms of accountability in the investigation of an officer-involved shooting, you know, first and foremost, it's a criminal investigation. It's a very thorough investigation that is completed. You know, so this is done by, you know, in our case, DCI, and so that investigative agency is probably the best in the state in regards to their ability, their access to resources, you know, their access to the crime lab and the state patrol to bring in special investigators in these situations. The investigative report is, as I said before, typically hundreds of pages long, reviewed by an elected official, the district attorney that was elected by the community to represent them as their prosecutor. And that elected official makes a decision. And then beyond that, you can go on to the DOJ website in Wisconsin right now, and you can read the entirety of the reports for the officer-involved shootings that DCI has investigated. All of that information, we have a very liberal public records, open records law in Wisconsin, and I think rightfully so in this case. So not only do we have an outside agency investigating, we have an elected official that makes a determination in terms of the lawfulness of the shooting, and then we share the entirety of the report. All of the videos are available for public review through the Department of Justice. I don't know how much more we can do to be transparent and to have accountability for our actions than what we're currently doing.
Louis, when a suspect is killed by law enforcement in line of duty, officers are seldom prosecuted or disciplined, and that we see in data. So between 2005 and 2016, nationwide, only two police-involved shootings carried out during an arrest were deemed unjustified out of about 1,200 reported by local police departments. Is there a hesitancy for prosecutors to charge officers, or is that just not true?
In my perspective as the president of the District Attorneys Association, I would just indicate that that would not be true. Prosecutors take the job very seriously. We file cases as we see that there is evidence to file such a case. And I think that the current process, the way the legislature set it up, is in a very appropriate process. And I can't comment on other district attorneys' decisions, nor other jurisdictions. But speaking about Wisconsin, what I've seen, I think that, as the chief indicated, when the Division of Criminal Investigation or any other outside agency does the report, sends them out to the district attorney, if we're finding that the officer's actions were, quote, justified and within their lawful authority and capacity, and that there was no criminal intent or element involved, we should applaud those findings and say then our training and standards bureau and processes are doing what they're supposed to do, which is training law enforcement officers to respond with certain levels of force, meeting certain levels of force, and that putting one person's a non-trained person in the officer's shoes and saying, well, I would have did this, that is not the legal standard, nor is it the analysis. It is a very rigid standard that we use that's set up by the courts and the statute so that everybody can see that each case is treated uniformly, specifically, but also without any level of bias.
Ben, two major law enforcement groups, the Police Executive Research Forum and the International Association of Chiefs of Police, have released some model policy guidelines that they're calling for higher standards than just reasonableness, de-escalation, and holding officers accountable for creating circumstances that justify deadly force among their calls for action. Ben, do you think changes are called for?
Well, I think when I look at the policies around the state and the country for law enforcement in terms of officer-involved shootings, I think they're very rigid. They're very it takes a lot to meet those standards. You know, we can do a better job in terms of officer training, but with that said, we give a lot of training to our police officers, and in terms of, like I mentioned before, how to interact with somebody who has mental illness, how to communicate generally, what your tone is. We talk about and train on implicit bias. We talk about de-escalation, all of our alternative force options, how we can tactically put ourselves in a better position so we don't have to immediately use force. All of these things that we train on are in our policy. And can we always do better? Yep, we can always do better. But I think we have a really high standard and expectation of our police officers here today. And I think, you know, the truth of the matter is that there isn't a police officer. I can talk certainly about Central Wisconsin. I know a lot of officers around the state of Wisconsin. Nobody comes to work looking to use their firearm in the course of their duty. It is a major incident, and it impacts our officers' lives forever when they have to shoot somebody in the line of duty. And the fact of the matter is that you could probably talk to every police officer that has a couple of years of experience, and they've probably been in a situation where they thought they were going to have to use their firearm in the course of their duties. But because they have good training, because they understand the policy and the tactics involved, because they're good communicators, sometimes because just good luck, they haven't had to use their firearm. But there are lots of examples of police officers just doing a fantastic job using these skills that we've talked about to de-escalate a situation and safely take somebody into custody without having to use their weapon.
Louis, is reasonable force a concrete measure? I mean, is there a hard line between what's acceptable and what is not?
Well, each case is specific, and in the analysis, the prosecutor looks at the totality of the circumstances to determine the use of reasonable force, and ultimately it's the use of deadly force to determine if that action was, first of all, lawful under the auspices of the sworn officer. Remember, we're dealing with people who are sworn to protect the law, that are lawfully allowed to carry a lethal force, and that are lawfully allowed to engage lethal force, unlike the general public. And the public has to understand that. We have parts of our society that enforce the law, and the people have given the law enforcement officer the ability to shoot a person legally. And these are difficult concepts, but just because someone was wearing blue in a badge and wears the firearm does not mean that every situation is reasonable. And I'd like to think that prosecutors understand that and that are doing their analysis critically, because there's always could be a situation where that analysis could go the opposite way, that it was not reasonable. But just because just because there have not been that many that have been found to be unreasonable does not mean that there can't be, or that the prosecutor would not choose to charge.
Ben, I'd like to talk a little bit about mental illness. Does mental illness often play a role in critical incidents, or is that rare? And how are officers trained to recognize mental illness and respond appropriately?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, you know, to answer the first piece of that, you know, every situation is different. You know, the facts of each situation are different. But we do know that mental illness does often play a role in some of these critical incidents that officers are involved in. So it is a significant concern. And, you know, we do provide training to our staff. Our staff goes through what's called crisis intervention training, and they learn about mental illness and how to recognize symptoms of mental illness in speaking with somebody. We have a crisis assessment response team here. We have people from our from North Central Healthcare. They're crisis professionals that are paired with police officers, and we're very proactive in identifying people who have mental health issues in our community so that we can build a relationship with them and we can check in on them so that we hopefully can mitigate these types of situations that we're talking about. And so we try to be as proactive as possible in training our staff to recognize and be able to communicate and de-escalate situations with people who have mental illness. And then we're proactive in partnering with other agencies in our community to be able to create relationships as much as we can with people who have mental illness so that hopefully we can keep them from getting into crisis situations where an officer-involved shooting is the result.
I do need to ask you about race. We see report after report after report that says, statistically speaking, people of color disproportionately affected by police shootings. Why is that?
Well, I can talk about my community. And I can talk about police training. And, you know, as I mentioned, we talked about implicit bias, which is it's a buzzword today, but it is something that's important for police officers to understand, you know, what implicit bias means and how it might impact their making a traffic stop or how they engage somebody. But, you know, what I can tell you from a police officer perspective is that, you know, our goal is to treat everybody respectfully, everybody professionally, and that we respond to the actions of the person that we are interacting with. And those actions that the person that we're interacting with is how we are going to react to them. If we're presented with a lethal threat, it's very difficult for us to do anything but respond with a lethal threat. You know, we have other tactics in place that we try to put into place, but, you know, these situations are very, very quickly evolving, and they're split-second decisions that officers are making.
Louis, we had a question from a listener who is asking why it seems that justice moves more quickly in the cases of police shootings. In other cases, criminal offenses or accusations take so long to move through the system. Why is that?
Great question. The reason is because there is a heightened level of public interest when a law enforcement officer uses deadly force. And because they're an official, so that we need to move the process as quickly as possible to basically inform the public whether or not that shooting was lawful. Now, that does not mean to say that a shooting of by a person who's not a law enforcement officer of someone else is not as equally serious or needs equal expeditious investigation, but that's specifically the Department of Criminal Investigation that handles most of these. They have a specific unit that's what they do. And as indicated, since 2015, they've had 69 reports. There may have been more, but what's posted is what's posted. Some of those, I believe it's actually 69, but the point is that we're doing these as quickly as possible so that the public can be eased or understand the situation, because it is concerning when anybody dies, but when a law enforcement officer is involved, we need to make sure that officer can continue to work.
Thank you so much. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. Appreciate this discussion. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests one more time, Wausau Police Chief Ben Bliven and Portage County District Attorney Louis Malepsky. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Rick is also our on-air producer today. Our producer is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll air a repeat of an earlier program on the lasting power of classic rock music, and be sure to watch for our upcoming debate between candidates for the 7th U.S. Congressional District, coming soon. Until next week, we're heading out of town.